Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Ed Moya, Senior Market Analyst over at Oanda. And Ed, well, this weekend, again, a lot of focus on what's going on between Russia and Ukraine and the increasing tensions and the ongoing war that is continuing. We were seeing some very interesting moves pre-market, even last night, on the back of the war escalation, where we saw stuff like gold bounce over 1900, but then gold has given that all up as we're recording this just in the last couple hours. We're seeing some other commodities that Russia has more control over, like oil, that is moving again much higher today. That's up almost $5, sitting right around that $96 region. We also have stuff like palladium that is also up about 5% today. But there are some of these moves that are being reversed. So, Ed, when you take a step back and look at all these market moves, what individual market or what individual commodity do you think is most important to watch?
Well, right now, I think that the most important one to watch is definitely oil prices. I think that that is, first and foremost, that will really be letting us know what is the ultimate sanction direction that the U.S. and EU will be taking. I think that you're starting to see that we're just a handful of days into this war in Ukraine, and over the weekend there was a major pivot, and it was to act a little bit more stronger against Russia, and now you're starting to see that there's this growing belief that you're going to see that Europe is willing to now suffer some economic pain here. And I think that the risks of intensifying sanctions are still there. I think that you're clearly seeing that, you know, Russia is a key contributor to the global economy. And as you highlighted, all those key commodities. And Russia, I mean, the energy situation, everyone knows that, you know, 40% of the natural gas for Europe and a lot of the crude is a vital part of what's making their economy run. But also you have wheat, you have the semiconductor chip industry, which is 90% reliant on their neon. And you also have all the several gases and other metals that are a big component for this global economy. So I think the key takeaway is that you're going to see that everything is going to bring us back to, I think, inflationary fears. And I think that the longer this drags out, the more pricing pressures we'll see and the greater hits to global growth. I think that you're going to see several economies are not going to see that economic recovery that they were so desperately hoping for. And it's really going to complicate everything. And I think that for you know, trying to track what will be your best barometer in this instance, I think that you could track the ruble, yes. You could track wheat prices, yes. But I think oil is going to be the one that will really kind of move the needle and sentiment. So that's kind of where I see the market being positioned right now.
Yeah, there's no doubt that oil and the nat gas from Russia is the main driver. And it's a big driver, as you mentioned, in inflation. But as you brought up, it's not just wheat. They actually have a ton of different grains and soft commodities that are grown in Russia that supply a lot of food, not just to Europe, but to other countries in Asia. And as we talked about, not just the PGMs like palladium, but also nickel, a lot of raw materials come out of there that are important for a supply chain. So I guess the question I have is, all these sanctions that certain NATO countries are putting on Russia actually going to be a boomerang effect and come back to spike the inflation and interrupt the supply chain? Could this actually come back to hurt the countries that are not Russia?
I think there's going to be a lot of losers in the way this unfolds. And what's really difficult is assessing how we're going to continue to see, you know, the West continue to limit their exposure to Russia. And I think one of the biggest things that we're tracking is, you know, Russia over the years has built up their reserves. And what they've been able to do is they have a handful of their money with China. So I think, you know, the most important thing that could really tilt the momentum on where this war is going to go is, you know, what pressure can be done onto China to sway them. And right now it seems that I think the likely scenario is that you might see China and Russia become more allies here, and that could really complicate some of these hard-hitting sanctions. It will take away the impact that the West was looking for, and you're going to see that this is going to be very difficult for the West to counter if China decides to, for the most part, side with Russia here. So I think there's too many variables right now, but I think that the biggest thing that one should be looking at right now is exactly how China is positioning itself.
Now, that is kind of a key distinction, isn't it, right? Because we are seeing a bit more of a division here between, let's just broadly call it, East and West, where East is more being Russia and China and maybe some other countries in there, and the West being Europe and the U.S. or North America broadly. This ties into the recent actions by a lot of these larger countries to kick Russian companies and Russia broadly off of the SWIFT payment system. So that does cut their banks off of key funding, but there could be a bigger thing happening here, right, Ed, where who knows if there will be a different SWIFT system coming up, or if, quite frankly, Russia is going to find a different way to fund their banks or to move things along outside of depending so much on the Western world. What do you think is possible?
I think right now the likely options are you could see that Russia and China could try to expedite their own type of messaging financial network, where you would be probably seeing, you know, several countries that would be willing to take part in that. And I think that if you were to create a kind of a competing SWIFT network, in this particular instance, there is so much demand and opportunity, it would attract, I think, a large part of the developing and the emerging world. And that is going to probably be one way that you could see this unfold. So I think there are too many unknowns right now. And I think that the likely scenario, though, is that you're going to be seeing a scramble for alternative networking systems here. And that, you know, that kind of screams crypto and blockchain technology. And that's probably why you'll see there will be a big race here to provide that opportunity. And that's probably why you are seeing a little bit of a bump here for cryptos.
Yeah, and I was going to ask what your thoughts are, because I know you follow the crypto markets very closely. And when that information came out that we may see UN nations and NATO nations cut off Russia from the SWIFT system, a lot of people on our site, more focused on gold and silver, thought it would be beneficial to precious metals, that, you know, there'd be people and citizens that move back to storing their money in silver and gold to move it around and get around that system. But even between the countries you mentioned, like China, if you think about the old BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, Iran, and China, that are kind of ostracized at times, they've already started operating amongst themselves. And a lot of people have focused on the precious metal side, but I think it's far more likely that the cryptos are going to start shining here as an alternative path. What kind of options would citizens have, or would even countries have, to use cryptocurrencies to get around these SWIFT banking systems?
Well, I think what would make it very attractive is that doing this on crypto, with blockchain technology, it would be faster, it would be cheaper, it would be more efficient. So there are potential advantages there right from the beginning. Obviously, security is the biggest risk. And as you try to create that type of network, obviously, that would be a big focal point. But you're going to see that before this war in Ukraine, that was an avenue that Russia was going down. They've been trying to get away from the dollar for quite some time. China has been doing the same. So you're really seeing this war is just expediting some of those efforts. So I think that you're probably going to continue to see, you know, as these sanctions escalate, this is really going to force Russia into finding some alternative solutions, you know, temporary band-aids for accepting and receiving payments. You know, that's one of the beautiful things about crypto. So you could see that be a short-term solution, but I think overall there's going to be optimism here that you're going to have something new emerge, even because that was going to happen regardless of this war. You know, I think most people were anticipating that was going to happen a lot longer, years down the road, but now you'll probably see that there's going to be a lot more motivation to act a lot sooner.
Do you think there's going to be something new set up between a select group of countries, Ed, even on top of a whole new payment system? Or do you think it will be more all-encompassing that more people can use it?
I'm not sure. And I think what really complicates this is that there will be penalties for people. You know, I think these sanctions that were announced triggered a tremendous amount of fear, even just conducting any business with Russia. So I think you'll see that, you know, if this payment center or system is really just working with countries that are on sanctions list, I think long term growth is going to struggle because it won't widely be viewed or used. So I think for it to be successful, they need to try to make it more open, but that'll be difficult if you're getting sanctioned by the West. And I think once the war is over and there's still a push for this payments and system, you'll probably see that it will be closely followed. And if it does provide significant advantages over SWIFT, and I think on the payment side and as far as transaction speed, you could definitely see it start to win over a lot of business. So I think this is really going to be an important development. And I mean, that's the wonderful thing about the cryptoverse. We don't know exactly which direction what's going to become the priority, but right now it seems that this is a major opportunity. There is a need, and even once this crisis is over, that need is still going to be there. So you'll just see everything, so much money and effort put behind creating a new system.
And even after the war or whatever the skirmish is wraps up, Ed, you're right, there's already been a movement to try to find a way to get around the U.S. dominance on the U.S. dollar and the SWIFT banking system. And there's already initiatives between Russia and China. And with China having a digital currency, it may be that Russia gets into a digital currency and tries something similar. What about the standard old school hard money of gold and silver, though, Ed? We did see some movements in the overseas trading where gold had spiked back up on some of these concerns. There was a lot of comments about possibly Russia funding some of these efforts with their precious metals hoards. Where do you see gold and silver fitting into the equation for these countries and central banks, but also for the average citizens? Could that be another way that they store their money outside the banking system?
I think gold investors just need to be patient. I think that given the developments abroad and the likelihood these geopolitical tensions are just going to intensify and that there are other ones brewing, you saw that gold, it just ran out of steam early last week and it couldn't break above 2000. I think the importance of that was pretty significant, 1976.50 being the futures high. We're going to be trading on incremental updates with the Russia-Ukraine situation. But I think that in the end, and this is going to be more noticeable, this war is just going to continue to fuel that inflationary argument. And that is going to deliver a massive hit to global growth. The calls for a robust recovery, you know, COVID reopening, and all this optimism is going away quickly. I think that here in the U.S., incomes are steadying. Americans are going into their savings account to deal with these pricing pressures. You're starting to see a loss of momentum here. And I think that is really going to lead to further growth concerns. So I think that gold is going to remain extremely volatile, just given what we're seeing with all these geopolitical updates. But in the end, growth concerns are what's going to be the backbone for gold to continue to make that push higher. And that's probably the big reason why everyone's going to be watching the flattener and trying to see you know, are we poised for a recession at some point end of next year, or is it going to be even sooner? Those risks are real, and that is because of the inflation story. So I think investors here are just trying to make sure that they don't become overly optimistic that we're going to see a robust outlook going forward. I think there's still good reason to be optimistic, but the inflation, everyone got inflation wrong last year, and it looks like this war is going to make us rethink when we're going to see the peak and exactly how that will really be impacting growth probably in the second half of the year.
All right, Ed, we'll wrap it up here. Boy, oh boy, there's a lot of cross currents in these markets now added to this whole Russia-Ukraine war. And I know a lot of the gold bugs are disappointed. The gold isn't much higher, but it's still right around 1900. And yeah, I know it tried to make that run towards 2000 tail end of last week. But for as volatile as everything has been, gold has actually been in a bit of an uptrend for the last couple months. And hey, who knows if that continues or what that narrative will be that continues to move gold higher. But we'll keep following along. But I think that whole potential changes or new payment system to take over SWIFT, that is fascinating, but we have no idea what's happening or going to happen there. Ed, thank you as always for your time, buddy. We'll chat again next week. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you. You too.